to Stories from the Heart. I'm your host, Sandra McDevitt. During World War II, a medic is overwhelmed by the number of wounded he has to help during the battle for Peleliu Island in the Pacific. Today, find out who his surprising helper was on another true story from the heart. Before us stood the island of Peleliu in the Pacific, 500 miles east of the Philippines, its coral beaches glistening white in the September sun. The day was hot and dry, the island lush, its beaches dazzling. But behind the dunes, the machine guns of the Japanese awaited us. It was 1944, and the world was at war. I was sailing with a shipload of Marines. Months earlier, in 1943, they had bloodily secured Guadalcanal from the Japanese. Their assignment now was to go ashore and take this island. I had been trained as a hospital corpsman. My job was to bandage wounded troops under fire on the front lines to keep injured men alive until we could get them to the Navy hospital ship anchored offshore where surgeons awaited. On this day in mid-September, as one of the several pharmacist mates, I was poised at the ship's rail, ready to land with the Marines. God, I prayed, please protect me so I can tend to the injured. It was my constant fear that I'd get wounded and not be able to care for the men. Okay, Doc, I heard, let's go. I scrambled over the rail and onto the cargo netting that formed a ladder down the side of the ship. Amphibious vehicles, ducks we call them, waited below. Piercing screams out of the water sent chills down my spine. Men were being massacred as they landed. Again I asked God to help me handle whatever awaited me ashore. Our ducks steamed a zigzag course toward the beachhead under the thunder of enemy fire. The noise deafened us. Geysers of seawater erupted everywhere. Enemy shelling intensified. The duck beside us was hit while I watched helplessly. Its occupants never reached the beach. Half our troops were killed on the way to shore. Amazed to be still alive, I joined a patrol party on the beach. 48 of us crawled from tree to tree, hiding among the brush to assess the situation. After only 1 hour, our patrol was reduced to 8. We were told by the brass that the island was expected to be secured within 24 hours. By nightfall, the fierce fighting had subsided, but it was obvious someone had miscalculated. Our troops had pushed back the Japanese only about a mile, and a great cost to men and material. Later we heard of the intricate system of tunnels the Japanese had burrowed beneath the island's coral surface. Their troops hid in these, and even heavy naval bombardment failed to make a dent in the Japanese defenses. Now, left on the beach with men of an engineering battalion, we scraped away at the hard coral, trying to help carve out a foxhole large enough to protect us during the night to come. We remained ashore to hold the beach, but as we watched the U.S. ships disappear over the horizon, none of us expected to be alive when they returned in the morning. Ammunition was so low that we had only about 4 rounds per man, hardly enough to hold off the Japanese, who even now were reclaiming the territory won that day by our men. All night the Japanese could be heard passing among the shallow foxholes as we silently hunkered down to await the dawn. 7 engineers and I tried to fade into the coral walls of our foxhole, 8 feet square and 3 feet deep. As noiselessly as possible, we burrowed our way deeper into the strange island coral. The men began to tell stories about their wives and children. Photos, dumped from sweat and salt water, were pulled out of pockets and passed around. Nice-looking kids. The boys, you all over again. She looks like a good woman. Hearing the Japanese troops pass close by, we held fingers to lips and pressed ourselves into the hard coral. Shells bursting in the black sky lit up the enemy's silhouettes. We breathlessly waited to be discovered, to be shot, to be blown to bits by the grenades that continued to be lobbed into our foxhole. But, incredibly, every single grenade lobbed into our foxhole was a dud. By morning, we were still alive. And at dawn, we heard the Navy guns starting to bombard the island again. They were back, and we were caught in the crossfire. More Marines bent on retaking the beach that had been won and lost the day before were loading into landing craft. As they came ashore, I raised my Red Cross armband on my bayonet and was relieved to hear, "Hey, hold your fire, he's one of ours." Then wearily we pulled ourselves out and scattered to perform our various assignments amid ear-shattering blasts and shrieks. It was another day of flying bullets and horrible bloodshed. I had set up my first aid station at the end of the landing slip near Bloody Nose Ridge. Bushes and trees offered some cover, but the strip itself was a barren expanse. About a half a dozen stretcher bearers worked with me. As fast as they brought in men torn apart by shrapnel and bullets, I applied sulfa and battle packs. The Japanese snipers began picking off the stretcher bearers. Confusion reigned. Shells exploded around us. Men fell faster than we could reach them. Hopelessness overwhelmed me. The line of stretchers at my station seemed to extend into infinity. "God help me," I gasped. "I don't know if I can do anything for these men." And then, one after another, four men were gunned down trying to reach a Marine who looked like he would not make it. Finally, I ran to the wounded man myself. His condition was desperate. The hole in his middle was the size of my two fists held side by side. "I've got his feet, Doc," an assistant yelled. We carried the Marine back to the station and set him down at the end of the line. There was nothing I could do for him. He was dying. I had been trained to give my attention first to those who had the best chance of living. That's how we set up the line of stretchers. So this man, mortally wounded, was placed last. Every one of these men, bleeding, going to shock, needed me at once. I couldn't move fast enough. Just then a Marine stopped by my station. "Doc," he said, "those men in your foxhole from last night, they didn't make it." That finished me. I had prayed that God would sustain me, but now I began to crumble. Death pressed in on me. The horror was brutal, unbearable. Tears welled up. Tears for my friends of the night before, for their families, and for these men waiting in agony for me to help. It all seemed too much, more than I could handle, even with God's aid. I was going to lose these men. They would never see their families, just like the guys in my foxhole. I tried to hide my face so the injured wouldn't see the extent of my despair. A hand on my shoulder startled me. I looked up into the calm face of a man. He gazed at me with kindly eyes. Sand kicked up everywhere. Guns blasted at the front and from the battleship offshore. But the man seemed unfazed. His words puzzled me. "Don't worry, son. These Marines are going to be all right. You aren't going to lose even one of them." He was of average height, with a clean-shaven, ordinary-looking face. He was dressed in an outfit like any other I'd ever seen, and it seemed odd in the midst of battle. He was not Asian or from any other culture from that part of the world, and he didn't appear to be an American. His words gave me a surge of energy, and I turned my attention to the wounded. As I patched one and then another, I glanced up to see the man who had comforted me. He preceded me down the line of stretchers, bending over each Marine. "Hold on, son. Doc is on the way. Hold on, son. Doc is on the way. He'll be with you soon." He laid a hand on each man as he moved down the line of 25 to 30 stretchers. The men must have thought he was a chaplain, but I knew he wasn't. Then as he passed over the last man, the Marine with the huge hole through his belly, he lingered for a few moments. When I next looked up, He was gone, but where? In front stretched the airstrip, a long open expanse, too long to cross in a few seconds. Strange, I thought. I glanced around in all directions. He had disappeared, yet I knew that was not possible. It would be 74 more grueling days before the island would be completely captured by the Marines. But this day would stay with me forever because, after I passed down that line of men, working over each with renewed strength of purpose, I stopped short at the last stretcher. I could hardly believe what I saw. It wasn't possible, and yet there it was, reminding me of a power greater than war, greater than anything we can imagine, God's power. I was staring at the Marine who should have been dead. Impossible as it seemed, what had been an enormous perforation in his midsection was now a small, manageable wound, no bigger than the tip of my thumb. As for the rest of those men, every one of them lived and was transported to the hospital ship, just as promised by the mysterious comforter on the island of Peleliu. Thank you for joining us in Stories from the Heart. Today's true story, On the Beach of Peleliu, was written by Brooke Gex and published in Angels on Earth magazine. Stories from the Heart is recorded in the studios of Ave Maria Radio. For information or to contact me, email sandra@avemariaradio.net. I'm Sandra McDevitt. May God bless the rest of your day.
Listen to all of Ave Maria Radio on the internet at AveMariaRadio.net. Hear clean, crisp sound from your computer of all your favorite shows. And now you can research the things that matter most, just like Al Cresta, by going to the Cresta in the Afternoon guest archives. Find the headlines, the stories, and the links that goes into each program. Then comment on it. Now you even have more reasons to become a radioactive Catholic by going to AveMariaRadio.net.